he did made a great career in terms of being a doctor at a charitable hospital, runs the charitable hospital. Now he's a biggest contributor to that particular hospital. That hospital now impacts 10,000 people every day.
Wow.
And you can walk into that hospital and get yourself consulted from any discipline for less than 100 rupees. And so it's like that sort of impact in your life. And he still, until recently, was paid like very low, like less than whatever, $1,000 a month. And so him, it's all about social impact.
This is the Indian Nest Podcast, stories of success from leaders and change makers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together, because every story is unique. I'm very excited to have Kedar Deshpande with us today. He was till recently CEO of Groupon. He was also former CEO of Zappos. I invited him on this show as I was very curious to learn about his journey from the town of Aurangabad in India to the leadership of Zappos. Welcome, Kedar. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Great. Kedar, we obviously want to chronicle your journey for your sake, but also more importantly for our listeners who are looking to get inspired, looking to learn, understand the decisions you made, the inflection points, etc. In order for us to do that, we basically, with every podcast, go right to the beginning. So take us right to the beginning. Where were you born? Tell us about your parents. And if your grandparents were active in your life, tell us about them.
Yeah, Sanjay, I was born in Aurangabad, India. It's a town in Maharashtra, not to be confused, a town in Bihar. And I actually grew up not in Aurangabad so much early in my life. Actually, I didn't get to spend a lot of time with my grandparents either because my dad was doing his PhD and we moved to Jammu. And so I was actually in Jammu for earlier stage in my life. And then he came back after his PhD. We settled in Nanded. That's where he was history professor. And so my mom, she was doing a lot of things. She's actually a very great social worker. And if you go in Nanded, almost everybody like can tell you like how great it is to work with her. And so she was very, very in different social circles, always busy. And so this sort of like my dad being the professor and very studious, like I remember in early days in my life, I would stay next to my dad after my shower and I would be like, he will give me some compliment or he will give me a chocolate or something like that. But he was into his writing so much that he wouldn't notice me for like 30, 40 minutes straight. And he would write the book. So we have a great stack of books at home and whatnot. He was all into the studies. And mom always has somebody visiting. She's doing something and she's organizing these great events and whatnot. So it was like a very different life for me, watching both of them and growing up with that sort of influence.
Kedar, just to recap it for our listeners, Dad, what was he teaching as a professor?
So he used to teach American history, essentially.
Really?
Yeah. And
Nanded.
In Nanded.
Wow.
He also, as I told you, he was a history professor. He is a history professor, but he actually also wrote some of my textbooks. And so if you go back, my fourth grade textbook, he wrote that for history. In Maharashtra, it was in publication until very recently. And he wrote several books for UPSC exams and whatnot. So at the core of it, he was a student of history who has studied history in various different dimensions. He taught American history. He taught Indian history. And all in a way, it was much more enjoyable. So growing up, everybody used to hate history. For me, history was my favorite subject. Because he will teach me history in such a way that it is like a story to me. It comes naturally to me as opposed to history being like this boring, what happened in 1915 and whatnot. I will exactly remember what happened because the way he taught me that.
So what was it? He was visualizing it for you? You could visualize what he was saying from a historical standpoint?
all the stories, not only visualizing, but getting them in real life sort of visualizing. So it's not, oh, this particular person has went revolutionary and these particular people came in. He will get into the details such as what was the genesis, what was happening on the ground, what were people saying at that particular time. So he will bring on those quotes from smaller folks, not only just the Abraham Lincoln said this, but also the soldier, what was his state and things like that. So it, you could actually feel the entire thing.
So fair to say that even as a child, you knew about American history in sitting in Nanded?
Yes.
Wow. That's very unique and very, very impressive. Dad was obviously teaching. He went to Jammu. Then he came back to Nanded. Tell us a little bit about the town. I mean, I know a little bit, but our listeners probably don't know what that is. If you're not from Maharashtra, you probably don't know what Nanded is. So tell us a little bit about that town. How was it? Friends you had? Just and a little bit about the school, the primary school you went to there.
Sure. So basically, Nanded is one of those border towns. So those of who you don't know, Nanded is actually in Maharashtra, but very close to Hyderabad. So a lot of Telugu influence. And then on top of that, Nanded is the second pilgrimage for Sikh because Guru Gobind Singh passed away in Nanded. And so there's a big Gurdwara in Nanded. And so a lot of history in terms of if you go to not just the main Gurdwara, but you can go to the five others and you can see what happened there. And so I had a lot of Sikh friends. We used to go to Gurdwara a lot. And then I had this influence. So people will talk Telugu. And then you have Marathi. And then you have this like a mixed culture of everything, right? Being in Maharashtra, you are not like purely Maharashtrian. You are also speaking some other languages. Now, my friends, I remember my friends, we were like, as in any tier three, tier four city, like play, enjoy a lot of, go to a lot of classes, but enjoy a lot of cricket, gully cricket and the dense town. And so specifically the area I used to live in, part of the Nanded, was very close to a college where all the rural students used to come in and stay for their 11th, 12th. And then they will go away to do a lot of great things. And so my colony where I used to live, like in the morning, 6 o'clock, it will be rush. Usually that's not the case for every other locality, but mine was because everybody was trying to. And so there were a lot of students living around us as well. And so I used to see them and then 5 years later, they will come back and say, oh, now I'm here, there, whatever. They have the great aspirations. So my friends used to be like, oh, wow, I'm going to be doctor. I'm going to be this, that, because that particular person did that. Not just because you are inspired by somebody, but like you saw the real life person. And then my friends, it was a very interesting combination. Like all of them, they had different interests. So you would find this very funny, but we used to go to the school and then skip the classes to go play chess or to practice for our tournaments. And it was completely okay in those days. Like you traditionally see in 90s in India, it was like study, study, studies. That was not the case for us. It was more of like study is part of your building, but you can do all these other things as well. That said, we were used to grow like my, when I tell this to my daughters, like they cannot imagine this. So we used to have the school building, I remember vaguely, like they were made by bamboos. And so you can, like a 100 student class there, you can actually poke the hole in the bamboo wall and see what is going on outside. It's all up to you whether you want to learn or whether you want to actually do something or you want to go just spend the time there and not do anything. And so those were the conditions those days. But there are like students who are methodical learners and there are students who just went there to pass the time. So I had a mix of whole bunch of friends.
Yeah, it sounds like a very fascinating place. Kedar, coming back to mom and dad, you said dad obviously was academic. If you were sitting there for 30, 40 minutes, you'd be writing away. He might not even notice you are because he was in his own historical world, thinking, planning, etc. Mom was a little bit opposite. She was very social, probably an extrovert, and networked. So tell us a little bit about mom. She would be working within the community, doing things. What is your memories of her?
Yeah, so mom is, I think my organization skills are all because of my mom. I think she was a great organizer. Not only she connected with people, but she did this like great gatherings. Like you will have 5,000 people coming to Nanded, and she will make sure that, oh, you organize all these particular people coming in, staying here, doing all these things. She was also a very good teacher. She taught for a year or so, but then she left it because she wanted to focus on my growth as opposed to just bring another job. But like all people used to come to her for advice, so she will have the time for that. Then she probably 5-6 years ago stepped down from a director position in a bank. So she was also a director in bank, but that particular bank was not there to begin with. So she actually made sure that she connects with people, then understand the importance of saving, running the saving circles. Then she ran a charity foundation to make sure that the girls in Northeast get to education. So they were brought in from Northeast to here to sponsor the education when the parents can afford it. And she ran that whole organization as well. So mom essentially was like a, I would say, force of nature in terms of being able to do all these things while completely making sure that the family is taken care properly by her. It's not like we are very rich because it's very humble background. It's only supported by my dad's salary, but she's doing all of this with that and making sure that everybody's happy leaving the home.
Wow. She was a multitasker. She was an extrovert, great organizer. She could manage 5,000 people. And then she was also considerate of the community by getting this community bank, something like a community bank set up, which did not exist. So in a way, she was a community leader, if you really were to think about it.
Yeah, we have various different phrases for her in our home. Community leader is one of those.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. And then when you were going to school, as you said, school was a little different. Dad was not teaching in that school, right? He was teaching in colleges.
Yeah.
Were there subjects that you were inclined towards? I mean, you had a mix of friends, you had Telugu friends, Sikh friends. Were there any subjects that you were inclined towards either?
Actually, to be honest with you, there was, besides history, because history was taught at home and it was very, for me, I found some subjects very easy. They come to me very easy. For example, mathematics was very easy. And there were some subjects which were very hard for me. But I was not into, I want to go deep into this particular subject. So to be honest with you, from childhood, I always found it very fascinating to be more of entrepreneurial. And so another influence on me was that my dad has a big extended family. So did my mom. Most of these particular members were entrepreneurial. And so they had their, like my uncle, he had a lot of businesses. And he grew up with my dad, which with a humble background. So if you even step back, like my dad, he had 4 brothers, 2 sisters. His dad passed away when he was 9. And then so they grew up on mom's single income as a teacher and very in poor condition. So all of them grew themselves. And my uncle was the one who was running a big business empire. So by the time I was probably 9 or 10, he was running multi-crores business in India by himself, with brothers and supporting brothers and whatnot. So I think overall, like I found the entrepreneurship to be very fascinating from since childhood. My dad was not into entrepreneurship. He was very studious. So he never joined the businesses, even if there was like a lucrative, whatever, extension there. But to me, always subjects came down to is like, what is the application of these things? And so if I don't find the application in practicality for a subject, like you are talking about, the way it used to be taught in India was, it was like, this is a concept, learn it. Don't ask me where it is applied. And for me, it was all theory means I will lose the interest right away. But as I started to grow up, that's where the things which history taught me was in not in a way like, oh, this is the remember and answer in the exam. Never was about that. And so that's why I was so much into history, but other things, I was more into practical aspects. So I would solve the mathematics problems really well when it comes to some kind of profit or loss or how the business is going to make money. But when it came to derivative equation, at that time, I was like, how am I relating this to my everyday experiences? And so to me, it always came down to what is the practical applicability of this particular thing.
Let's talk about this uncle, because it seems like he had directly or indirectly some kind of an influence. Was he older than your dad?
Yeah, he was older brother of my dad.
Okay. And did you spend any time with him or visiting them, etc.? Was there much interface with uncle at all?
There was. I would say we spent some summer vacations with him and family. But it's not only him. So my mom's side also, people were very entrepreneurial. So my another uncle was running also. At that time, these guys came up with the businesses that didn't exist. So for example, now it's very common to have the borewell business and whatnot. These guys started that out of nothing, no capital whatsoever, and then getting the first truck to go in there and things like that. So all these guys were building the businesses. So for me, it was more about looking at these folks and saying how they are hustling to make sure that every day they grow their business. I also saw like what problems they were having and where they were struggling most as well. And so not every story is a great story in the end, but at the core of it, I saw the struggles and I saw the, you cannot cap your aspirations to say, I'm going to get a job and I'm going to then go on to do these particular things in life. There is much more to that, and it's on 24/7.
So you were driven more to the entrepreneurial side of the family rather than dad's academic stuff. Is that fair to say?
That would be a fair characterization. But I think that comes to me. And this is one of those things which is mom always tried to encourage me to go whatever the path I want to make instead of, oh, you need to go become an engineer or a doctor. Or dad was never into go into academics because this is a fixed job. Like that was never a thought process.
So you had your freedom to do a lot of those things. Now, you talked a little bit about sports also when you were in school there early on. Cricket was something that you enjoyed there?
Yeah, so growing up, cricket and chess, these were the two sports I played a lot.
Okay, what position in cricket did you play, if I may ask?
So it's more of a gully cricket. So that's
Of course. Played gully cricket, of course.
Exactly, and you're trying to be batsman as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because bowling is hard work.
Hard.
But I would say I was decent batsman than bowler overall.
Okay. That's good. And chess also, you're pretty fascinated with chess?
Yeah. Chess is something I learned. Actually, I don't remember how I learned it. I think there are some stories my mom has told me, like how my dad took me to the chess tournament and how we watched and how I grew up with it. But to be honest with you, like my chess memories are playing with my friends, school friends, and those guys were really good at it. And so I was trying to be better. So I remember those days.
Yeah. No, but at least those memories become important, Kedar, when you look back. So as you are going through school, then you, from primary to high school, were you still in the same school or did you move schools at all?
So until 10th, I was in the same school from my 4th to 10th in school. After 10th, I actually left my hometown of Nanded. I left my parents and I went to study in Aurangabad. So another big aspect of influence for me was that even though I'm a single child, I had cousins who are actually very exactly same age as me. And so to me, every vacation, I used to go and play with them or live with them and whatnot. And so for us, it became a routine. And so after 11th, I actually studied with my cousins in the college. And one of my cousins, which is very close to me, also studied with me in engineering. And so we were in the same class until the graduation. So it was a blessing because you don't have a brother, but you have the brothers this way.
Yeah. So in Nanded, was it English medium or Marathi medium or combination? What was the mode of education?
It was all Marathi medium.
Oh, wow. So till 10th, you were in Marathi medium, Kedar?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And so when you went to Aurangabad, was that English medium or Marathi medium?
So it was English. 11th, 12th, you have English medium. And then obviously, engineering is English.
Was that a difficult transition going from Marathi to English medium for you?
Not necessarily, because I think my dad and I spoke in English most of the time at home.
At home?
When I started learning English. So okay. I didn't learn the English the way typically you learn the English, which is after I think it's fifth or sixth when you get introduced to English, you study the grammar and you do this. He was always, we were in the practical everyday aspect of life. So we started speaking in English, and that's when I started to pick up the English much faster. And so for me, it was always about that. And so that's why even in 11th, 12th, I didn't pick up biology. And I think that's one of the reasons I feel sometimes my characterization of biological terms is really weak in English, because I never came across some of these particular words, or I never studied that way. But otherwise, in a daily life, I can speak fluently.
So Aurangabad was English medium. Just to step back on a point you made, and we discussed this before, you are an only child, but you mentioned to me that you never felt like an only child because of the extended family you have. Can you just elaborate that for our listeners a little bit?
Yeah. So typically, when you have the cousins, the cousin distance relationship is, oh, you have cousins and you spend some amount of time. But me and my cousins, like, we were very close to each other. And like, we were in the same class. So even if I struggle with the concept, they will tell me. We will do like these outings together. We will encourage each other on everyday basis. We'll fight also a lot. But at the core of it, never felt like I never had a brother. I don't know how it is like to have a brother, which is going to be different from what I had with my cousins. And so exact same age, you also understand like what's going on in their mind. And it's not like they are coming to angle up, oh, I'm going to give you wisdom of words or anything like that. It's you have a friend that you can talk anything with, and they know your mom knows them, like they are exactly your brother.
So you never felt any issues about being the only child. In Aurangabad, what subjects were you focusing on, Kedar, in the 11th and 12th?
So I got my option as electronics, but basically I was, so this is very funny for your listeners. I think this is one of those things where after 10th, that was not very common in India those days, but I took my aptitude test. And the aptitude is not about, hey, you are going to have score X, Y, Z. It was about like which career you should go into. And so they tested me and they told me like, you don't seem a very good person to go to science background or engineering background. You should go to actually commerce and go to the business background. And they told me based on my answers. It's not like I came up with those particular answers. And I was like, yeah, you are rubbish. Nobody goes to commerce who is good. All the people who are talented always. So you're telling me I'm really weak in science. That's fine, but I will study harder or something like that. And so to me, that was one of those things, which is the interest is your interest. And I went to engineering. I went through my science background. Like I took electronics as an option. To a certain extent, I'm glad I did, because I think to bring that forward, I think one of the reasons I actually am glad that I went through this particular engineering process is now, with that particular applicability angle in my mind, I could understand what the gap is. Most of my colleagues, sometimes in the business, if they don't have the background in computer science, or if they don't have background in engineering, they struggle with this particular, like, why this can't be done in 5 days, or why we need to do it in the right way, or why do we need to do this how can we shortcut this particular process? They either will take the answer for it on its face, or they will be able to question it like very 100% opposite way, versus I actually got to know how this thing is working, how this thing is created, and then what are the practical aspects it's failing on. And so I always was able to balance those two. And I think that's to my actual education in science and engineering.
So that was an inflection point that you could have, if fallen your aptitude test gurus and gone into commerce, but because you kind of wanted to prove a point that, just for folks to know, which makes no sense, is that if you don't get the greatest grades, they push you towards commerce. But if you have great grades, then they say you should go towards science and engineering, unlike here. Now, I don't know if that's still the case, but you were trying to prove a point that, hey, I'm good enough for engineering. But looking back, that has served you greatly because it's given you the foundational knowledge. Kedar, that's what you're saying.
Foundational knowledge is one aspect of that, but another aspect of that is applicability of that particular knowledge. That's the one which to me is really, really critical, because foundational knowledge is not like I'm creating new building blocks on these particular things. But applicability gaps, I understand why X is applied versus Y is applied, as opposed to just making a blanket statement to say, I just want this done in 5 days. I don't care how it is done. I can understand that. So there was a great, just to extend that particular conversation, also great banter between me and my dad in those days. So my dad used to tell me, hey, you need to study harder, because he was so studious. Like, he always went, and I was like, yeah, but I don't believe in studying so much harder for the entire year and then be happy for one day of my life. And so he was always telling me, like, till this day, he will tell me, like, have you done your MBA? Or you should now think about doing your MBA. Because to him, like, it's everything goes through academics and those particular steps. That was a different conversation all the time.
That's typical in a lot of Indian families. And especially, you had a very meaning and a very literate dad who probably wanted you to follow in your footsteps. Now, when you left Nanded and moved to Aurangabad, did you miss home at all? Because this was probably the first time you were kind of leaving home, right?
Yeah, I missed home tremendously. Obviously, at the end of the day,
mom, especially
mom's safety, like everything, safety as in like you go to mom and everything is right. So some anecdotes there, like which you might find really interesting, is like I used to be looking forward to the days I'm going to go back to Nanded, not just to have home cooked food, but also everything taken care for me. So I used to haul my overall laundry, do suitcase, just go back, get everything done. And people will be like, why don't you do it here? It's cheaper that way rather than hauling those two suitcases. I was like, nope, they do it better there. Or my mom will give me lots of things to eat. And probably I will finish them all in a week rather than like 2 months of supply. But I think it was great for me to leave the home as well, because at that particular age, you're trying to figure it out, like how to live on your own, and good support from cousins. So it is a good combination. Like, you're not completely on your own, but you are also growing through that particular state that, like, you are not always dependent.
Yeah. So after 12th, what happened? How did you do? And what was the thought process for college, Kedar?
Again, the similar thought process, which was like, everybody is going to engineering. For me, it was like following the general path. Okay. I was not one of those guys who was trying to take a different direction. But I think the eye-opening thought that happened, if you talk about inflection, that's when actually it happened, is that until that moment, I didn't have the understanding of how much money we have or how we should live and whatnot. I was like living, even if my dad has no such great earning, I was living like, it's fine. I can afford all these particular luxuries. And after 12, I remember I had to take what they used to call that, and I don't know what they do right now, but payment seat option, because the branch or the college I wanted to have was not available in Aurangabad on a free seat option because my score was not so good. And so I felt really bad about that. Like, I felt so bad about that, that my dad has to put up so much money at that particular point of time, that I drastically 180 degree change my behavior, that like, and it's not like I now reflect on it, that it did change for me, where now I started to take studies much more seriously. I started to go back to options to figure out like, how can I get into free seat option? I don't want my dad to put up this kind of money. What are my options and what my career could be? And then I started to like think about what my future could be, as opposed to, oh, everybody's joining this, so I will do this particular thing. Now you are like, no, I have to do things much more deliberately to make my career and get rid of this financial assistance for myself.
So that was a big turning point, because you suddenly, till that time, you were kind of living in a cocoon, saying, hey, everything is good, just not worrying about it. And then suddenly you realize that you're putting a lot of pressure on your dad and it doesn't make sense. And you need to do something to kind of reduce that. That's what you're saying, Kedar?
Yeah. Basically, with the limited financial resources, he is still willing to go everything do for his son. That's the greatest testament to him and mom. And from that particular depth to like coming back to say, hey, I don't want to have this kind of debt on my parents. I don't want my parents to suffer financially for me. And what can I do? And so that was the
turning point. And you turned the switch, so to speak. And then what happened? Tell our listeners.
Actually, so 3 or 4 months into that particular like college admission process, they open up some free seats, or at least at that point of time. And they said, oh, but these free seats are available in different whatever disciplines. So I was in mechanical engineering, and they said, oh, there is this instrumentation engineering and we are having some free seats there. Would you like to shift? And I was like, yes, I will, because it doesn't matter to me. And it's not like I was very clear on why I want to go in mechanical engineering versus instrumentation engineering. At that point of time, you are like all speculative bets on the recruitment side. So I switched, and that load was off, but that changed me. That changed my expenses, living style, that changed my thought process on everything by that time.
Because of the free seat, you decided to move into instrumentation engineering. Okay. So how was that experience? You started college. Now, where was this? Is also in Aurangabad?
This is also in Aurangabad.
Okay. So tell us, how was that experience of going to college there? Were your cousins also there, or was it just you on your own?
No, my cousin was also there. He was also in the same instrumentation engineering. He landed there from, like, he had an option of civil engineering or something, and he came from that. So we both ended up in that particular same branch. 16 students, which was unheard of at that particular time, because engineering strength used to be like 50 people classes, and we only 16 of us. It was a great college in terms of we used to do a lot of practical, like, discussions. But most of the engineering aspect in those particular days, like instrumentation was a very, very, I would say, underdeveloped industry at that point of time. And for us to do specialization in instrumentation engineering and be able to actually see something in action was very rare. One of my actual batchmates got placed, two of them actually got placed in a German company, which came to recruitment there. And that was like a shock to everybody else. Oh, people are getting hired into instrumentation engineering to do instrumentation engineering. One of my friends is actually running a company nowadays in instrumentation. But at that particular point of time, none of us thought we are doing something which has any applicability into the industry. And what you had in colleges was also very, I would say, very limited in terms of like, how is this applied to the actual challenges in the industry?
So you were not that passionate about college during that time, would you say that? Because you didn't see because you're a person of applicability, you need to see what is the practical application of whatever it is, right? Would you say those were okay years?
Yeah, I was just going through the motions, to be honest there. In general, like graduation to me felt, okay, I have to learn through these 4 years to get to something else, which is a promised land is somewhere afterwards. And so to me, oh, I need to get done with these things. And that's why sometimes I regret that, because the practical aspects would have changed that mindset for me. But at least in those days, it didn't.
As you were coming towards graduation, then what happened, Kedar?
So everybody started to look for the options. I also started to look for my options. One of the options was to go do this master's in the United States. And so I decided I'm going to study hard for that. While doing that, preparation for the exam, and I also did some assignments here and there, part-time assignments, I would call that. But most of it is focused on, hey, I'm going to do the master's, I'm going to go to the States, and I'm going to try to do my master's in computer science, because that's something which was like a lot of industry applicability. I see a lot of my also batchmates going into that one, and I see that they're working on something. So I actually have another cousin who was working at that particular point of time as a software engineer. I saw him doing things which are like creating software for Nokia phones at that point of time. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I want to see how this goes. And so I saw a lot of applicability of the software in day-to-day applications. That was to me, oh, this is something I want to do. And so that's why I decided to do the master's. And then I eventually did my GRE and then went for master's options.
The thought of coming to the United States, how did it come across? Was it your cousins, or you just saw other people doing it and you were looking at applicability? Because Were a lot of people from your college deciding to go to the US?
Some of them. I would say there are some distant cousins. There was a distant cousin who was also in United States. But at the core of it, I was looking at two options. Okay, do the CDAC and join with some of these particular computer companies. But then a lot of these particular folks, so I appeared for CDAC, but then it's like, you are going to be between the thousands, and I don't know what the growth prospect looks like versus United States. At that time, felt like, hey, it's something, a brand new platform. Like there was, things started to boom. Like I graduated in 2000, the bubble didn't burst right then. And so everybody was excited about this internet thing. You are looking at internet and you are like, wow. And I remember going through the first website of Yahoo on a dial-up. And then it loaded like after 4 minutes, text web page. And I was like, yeah, this is something which I want to do. And the people are like very excited. So that to me was like the path I wanted to go, as opposed to go and do another job and just stay happy with that.
Yeah. You did your GRE. And then which college did you join, Kedar, in the US?
So I went to University of Nevada, Reno. And people asked me like, why do you live in Reno? Of all the places, why did you go to Reno? And so I tell them my options were, the colleges which I got the admission for was in Miami, Reno, or in South Dakota. And South Dakota didn't sound very appealing to me at all. And to me, Miami was the better option. I could have gone there, but then in that particular case, the tuition fees was higher. And Reno, I got financial assistance. At least I was told that you will get a financial assistance, not right out of the gate. In computer science, they never gave you funding right out of the gate. But I was like, okay, that sounds good to me. And so I was not looking towards Ivy Leagues or something like that. Again, coming back from a background where I was just focused, not trying to go to IITs, not trying to go to like the top colleges. My motivation was just down to the path. I want to fit in with the local crowd. And that's, in between that particular, I should not be staying behind. That was the whole genesis. Like, so your everyday listener can probably sometimes can associate with that particular feeling. Like, I'm staying behind. No, you're not staying behind. You're just trying to stay afloat. That's the whole motto was that way.
So you just wanted to stay afloat. And so you had a basically choice between Reno, Miami, and South Dakota. Obviously, Miami and Reno have better weather, but you decided to go to Reno. So how was it coming from, let's just say, Nandev or Aurangabad to Reno? And was it in September you came or August?
I actually came in July. And so this is where the journey started to get much more interesting for me. So when I came in, I remember coming to Reno. First time in my life I sat on a plane. Obviously, most of the students have that sort of experience in those days where they are seeing the plane. And I sat on it, came here. Got a lot of wisdom from strangers in between journey to say, hey, this is what you should do. This is what you should not do, blah, blah, blah. And so came to Reno because 1 month ahead, because I was thinking like I could get a scholarship if I get ahead of the time. And so there are assistantships which are open at that summer. If you come earlier, if there is one open, you will actually get ahead of that. So that's one of the reasons I came in. Came here. Reno was small town as usual. And it was not like, oh, wow, this is like US is such a great, because my freeway ride started from airport to my apartment was like 7 minutes end to end. And so you don't get to see much of the United States in between. And so then you are in a small circle again. But I think the experience I was talking about, which was very eye-opening for me, is then I need to find assistantship. And for that, I printed out my resume and I went to actually door to door in every department and just knocking on the door and saying, hey, I'm graduate new student. Do you have any financial assistance here? Here's my resume. If you don't have, thank you so much and all that. I locked on probably 300 doors in 2 weeks. And fortunately, I got something where I got into a research project. I got the financial grant. Professor was looking for that, but I got only for 6 months. So most of my friends got it for 2 years plus. It's locked in for them for their masters. And the best part of the financial assistance is that your tuition fees is waived. So not only that, and you are earning, that's like double rate for you. And I didn't bring any money from India. I got in through my bank, or whatever, the bank loan, but I didn't want to take that as going back to the same theme. I don't want to load my parents. And so for me, it was pretty important to find the financial assistance, and I don't want to load up my parents. And so to me, that finding that through those 300 jobs was great. But then every subsequent semester, I had to find new opportunity because the jobs I got were very short tenure jobs. They waived my fees. They gave me the financial assistance for next 2-3 months, but they could not continue because their funding was going to expire and whatnot. And so every semester, I would start this process, but I got better at it. So this is where the angle comes in, where like I started to improve and I started to look at it and say, what can I improve this time? I'm not afraid of not knocking on the 400 doors this time rather than 300, but what can I improve? So then I started to collect the email addresses, wrote the scripts, collect the email addresses, then actually started to email all these particular different professors rather than just walking and knocking on the doors. And then every semester I got different doors open for me through various different ways, but I started to expand my audience every single semester. So none of the semesters I was without any financial assistance, but for me, it was great to go through this particular journey to be self-made of my own masters, as opposed to trying to just get the financial assistance and then say, oh, parents can sponsor the rest. I actually invented a mechanism to do better job hunting.
You made some very important points here. Firstly, did you have any element of insecurity because you're going semester by semester by semester? Because if you didn't get aid, then big problem. So was there, or were you just, you knew that you'd be able to find something?
No. I didn't go through that. There was insecurity, but I saved up for that.
Oh, you saved up for that.
Yeah. So every financial assistance I got, I would try to make sure that I spend minimum. And so that habit was not actually very difficult for me, given that I just came through that particular college habit where I was very, very, very spendthrift in terms of like where I can need to spend, I will. And so it was not very hard for me, but I always calculated that, hey, if I have to get my own financial fees for this particular semester, I should be able to do that. So I saved up for that as well.
So that's a very good point. But also you knocked on 300 doors. So that's also a message to our listeners is sometimes you never know which door is going to open. So you got to knock on a lot of them. But you kept refining your strategy. Let's just say the sales strategy kept getting better as Kedar, the sales funnel strategy. Your sales funnel kept getting better, right?
Yeah, that was the introduction of sales funnels process to me, is because now if you just expand your funnel,
right,
then your conversion is actually, even if it tanks, it's better overall in terms of dollars. And so for me, how do we expand that more doors? That was the lesson learned.
Yeah. So that's a great lesson. And so how was the 2 years at Reno, Kedar?
It was great. It was got to know some basic fundamentals of computer science, because until then I was like just theoretical. And then we worked on some image processing software, and then everyday problems and going through the data structures, fundamentals and whatnot. It was great from education standpoint, from camaraderie standpoint, working with American colleagues, understanding how to get your driving license. It was actually, to be honest with you, when I came in, I came in, as I told you, in July, and 9/11 happened 2 months later. And so it was also scary times sometimes. You are walking out and people are going to be like, hey, you're Taliban or whatnot. Like you are trying to make sure that you fit in so much, but at the same time, you are not like, cannot hide your identity, right? And so it was very important for me to like, our overall group of friends, for us to be together, but at the same time, advise each other what to do, what not to do, and things like that, new incoming students. So it was fun, but simultaneously a learning process to say how to fit in a new locality and not just go by your ways and just have your own circle only.
Yeah, those were very challenging times for the United States. Just probably one of the most challenging times I have seen. So you came in really at a very, very interesting time. But you did get a lot of hands-on experience by data structures and operating systems and all those other things, which hopefully have stood you the test of time as you climbed so many successful careers. So then you were graduating at that point. What happened?
So once I graduated, I tried to find a job. And so you are trying to find a job. Job is difficult in that particular market. It was like post-dot-com bubble, and everybody is very cautious in their hiring. And to me, I was trying to find a job as a programmer. And you're a brand new programmer, and I was not very good at it, to be candid. And this is one of those things which is later on you realize in your life is like, you can't make that as a life profession for you. And so I went to search on East Coast, West Coast. I was looking for a job. I was doing a part-time job in one of the research centers while trying to find this. Post-graduation also, you can continue to work that way. And so then I actually found a job at GE. Of all the places, there is a place in Nevada close to Reno called Minden, Nevada, which is like very close to Lake Tahoe. It was like 50 miles from Reno. And they acquired a company there for optimization processes. And so it was basically a company that was very good in creating the sensors, vibration sensors, and that could predict the machine life. And that particular company was Bentley, Nevada. And I was interviewed as part of GE for that specific software engineering position, joined there. And for next 5.5 years, I was at GE. Various different lessons through that particular job. But overall, it was great to be working at GE, particularly very thankful for one of my bosses there who took me under his wings and taught me great life lessons in terms of both like pragmatic lessons and what you are good at and what you're not good at, like identifying that.
Wow. Well, that's great. And then obviously your journey went on to Zappos and then obviously Groupon. And Kedar, when you kind of look back, we talked about some of the inflection points that you had, going to Aurangabad, going for instrumentation, coming to Reno, and probably also getting this mentor at GE probably also was pretty helpful from that standpoint to you, right?
Yeah, he was tremendous. One of those days, he told me, like, look, you are not very good at this software thing. And I'm all for your support. I will give you whatever the help you need. But this doesn't come naturally to you. So you do something which is very natural to you. And I think at that particular point of time, I was actually showing that I was going to, like to me, writing the software was not so much fun as opposed to going to the customer sites and seeing them use that particular software or talking to our sales folks and see why our software is not getting sold. What are the sales numbers? Are they increasing? Why they are not increasing? And having those hallway conversations. And so he like encouraged me to say, like, why don't you explore something in the other branches? Like, you clearly are very interested in the business aspect of things. And a lot of folks in the business were also saying, oh yeah, you'll be great at it. Come over here and you want to do this. So it was, but I would say, like going back to point around inflection points, Sanjay, this was not inflection for me. I was still trying to take the shelter of security that comes through the software engineering job, and I can go to another job and be a software engineer and okay. Things like that. To me, at the end of my GE career, like it came down to me for whether I want to continue here and I'm going to have a crisis because I was coming up on my H-1B years and I needed to move into something. If I want to start my green card process and whatnot, like people have started to do that, and I cannot be a software engineer stuck for next 10 years.
Right.
And so to me, it came out as, oh, I need to do something different. And I started to do this project management thing. So I went for a project management certification. I did that some of the work in GE. And so then I went on for project management and I took a job at Pepsi, completely 180 in terms of like, I went to New York to live there.
Wow.
My wife at that particular point of time was very settled in her job in Reno, but I decided I want to try this. And so we went to Pepsi for a year, did that project management there. And then I was like, I don't live on East Coast. Like, it's not for me. And so then I came back to West Coast and I was looking at the opportunities. And I was looking at the opportunities to say, like, which company I should join. And I had some great conversation with some companies. But Zappos at that particular point of time is a company. I read Tony's book, Delivering Happiness. I was very impressed. One of my journeys, I used to do the weekly commute from New York to Reno to meet her. And so I read the book on one of my weekly commutes. And I was like, man, I want to work in this particular company. And faith has it, like, I got an interview call from Zappos.
Wow.
Because the recruiter was like, looking for people who are from Nevada. I want to go back to Nevada.
Right.
And so she called me and I was like, yeah, I will interview for this particular position. They offered me within 5 minutes of interview.
Oh my gosh.
And because Zappos was always about personal emotional connection. So they always had the cultural values at the forefront. Yeah. And so I was like, I have a choice to go to these California companies, which are really, really high market cap and whatnot. And everybody wants to go to. But my mind tells me that I want to go to Zappos because this is the company where entrepreneurship is valued and your attitude is valued. And so I wanted to go to Zappos. And that's the decision I made, which was a great decision for me.
An inflection point. Wow. But when you made that decision, as you said, Kedar, just for our listeners, you said you had some maybe more financially lucrative things on the West Coast. But Zappos, was it because it was in Nevada? Or is it Tony's book? Or you saw a great cultural fit? Or was it all of the above?
I think Nevada was not the factor at all.
It
could have been somewhere else as well. I could have cared less. I think the company itself, and I never met Tony before that particular my job interview. And so to me, reading the book and then having this vibe reflected in the interview. And so you talk about culture, right? Like people talk about culture a lot, but like you can read any company's cultural values. But when you meet people from that particular companies, and without telling those particular people or without telling that you are meeting them for cultural values, can you actually tell the cultural values of the company without reading those? And I think that's the test that Tony successfully implemented in Zappos. And so I think...
But that's not the case in every company, right, Kedar?
Not at all.
Because you could interview 10 other companies and you might not be able to figure that out.
Exactly. Because one, either cultural values are very generic.
Yeah.
Or cultural values are some moonshot. Like you don't find them in people. Like that's not how the cultural values at Zappos, the process of creating these cultural values came through surveying people and saying, oh, what do you think Zappos culture is? And then people describing that. And then of that particular subset was defined as these are the cultural values for them. And so it's not made up in some particular fancy statement to be shown on some particular wall. It was actually living and breathing culture. And that I realized that in, as you can imagine, like 5-10 minutes interview process, you can realize that. That's a testament to the company.
So then you decided to join Zappos and then you were there for a long period of time, Kedar.
Yeah. So I joined in March of 2011 and I was there until December of 2021.
That's a long time. And you ended up running the company too, right?
Yeah, I was CEO of the company. In my last year and a half, I was CEO of the company.
Kedar, this is what I'm trying to understand and also for our listeners. You did an instrumentation degree, then you did a master's in computer science in Reno, computer engineering. Let's say in Zappos, what were you hired for? And you ended up running the company. That you got to kind of make it all add up for our listeners here because it doesn't add up somehow.
Yeah. So as I was telling you about, essentially, when I joined as a project manager. And so it was website release portfolio, which was under me. I did that for a while. And beauty of that is it gave me a very good layman's land in terms of what are the projects across the company that are happening. And so at that point of time, we had this monolithic stack, which we will release one day, and then everything is going to change tomorrow. So from your checkout to your product page to your anything like customer service tools change will change. And I got a very good visibility of what's going on in the company. One. Doing that for a while, I started to understand like, oh, these are the things which are really beneficial. And so when you look at, it goes back to the thing. It's like, when you look at the applicability, what are the things which are applicable here? What are the things, why we are doing those? You have to have the curiosity of why we are doing this. And sometimes you take the justification on it face value and you say, oh yeah, this is this and this is how it is going to be. But then you start to question that. And so that questioning again and again and again, like I'm not going to do this particular project release priority and whatnot. That gave me opportunity in product management. And so product management was a newly formed branch at that point of time. And it was like, oh, we want to increase the conversion here. We want to do these particular things. Great. Small number of people. We will tinker around. We will modify, incrementally make the progress, go to product management. The theme is always, where are the problems? How can you solve those particular problems? And this is a very common phrase these days used, but the phrase is never actually understood very well, is actually going back to core principles. Like what exactly they say you have to understand the core principles. Yes, but you also have to have the view of why this is happening in the first place. Curiosity of that why is the happening as an outsider view is very, very important. And so for me, when I was coming into each of these particular jobs, I was not trained for these particular jobs. I was just coming with the questions, problems, and understanding what's going on. And then ask, okay, before I provide the solutions. So always there is theory. From product management, I went to do something in marketing, like completely different. But again, goes back to the organization's strength of being able to give you the opportunities in a different sector completely without having a background. That credit goes to organization.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was coming up with the solutions that were actually making it a success. And so for me, you have to question fundamentals to say why we are doing this in the first place. Whatever is going on, because there is always the status. There is always status like cue in terms of, oh, this is what we are going to do. But nobody questions is like why we are doing this in the first place. And even if somebody does, they gave you a fluffy explanation. You are like, oh, they must be smarter than you. But you cannot take it as face value. You cannot say this is because we have X number of customers. So that's why we send X number of emails. Okay. So what happens in that particular case? And so that questioning of fundamentals is what brought me into marketing. Marketing, I got a success there. Then from marketing, I went into do some particular technical migration was stuck on Amazon side. I did that. Then I got the opportunity to run as GM of a business. Because again, this is where organizations' biggest problems are. And I was like throwing my hat. Hey, I want to do this. I will successfully want to do this. I have done that. So some credibility, but also organization's ability to take risk on me. And at the same time, I have to deliver that. I would say I was very lucky in some particular cases because some people were not ready to step up. And you have considered this particular job as, oh, this is a really good job that is bound to fail. Or sometimes it's my boss was very, very generous to give me that particular opportunity. But getting that principle level thinking, again, very, very used phrase, but first principle level thinking is one of those things you can question in whether you go in marketing, finance, or general merchandising. You can understand the fundamentals this particular way to say, and if you can connect in your head the dots, that's when you can actually make the impact.
So what you're saying is question the fundamentals, and that's what you did, whether you were in marketing, product management, or any of the different roles, and that kind of propelled you, but also credit to the organization that was taking chances on you, because every organization does not have that flexibility. So it was you raising your hand, it was the organization also saying yes, and you delivering, obviously, in each of your roles.
Yeah, it's a combination of all. And I think that's where the magic from organization standpoint, it's Tony's magic in terms of he wanted to design the organization in such a way that it was much more entrepreneurial. So we don't have to have this particular guardrails. It's the combination of my boss, Arun Rajan, who was really instrumental in taking the chances. And there were a lot of other people who were also taking the chances. And then for me to actually being able to deliver, what was the definition of success in that particular case?
Wow. When you were probably in Aurangabad thinking that you're going to be running Zappos, that's a big, great, great, great journey. And then you ended up in Groupon, a group buying site that a lot of us use and continue to use. How was that, Kedar? That was also a big jump, right? And
yeah,
you raising your hand again saying, hey, count me in as a guinea pig. Count me in as a guinea pig.
It was not me just raising the hand. It's also the recruitment process. But I think overall, Zappos, I was given a very tough, I cannot disclose the numbers, but a very tough transformation challenge at Zappos. And I was able to successfully deliver that particular challenge. So I was thinking, okay, where do I want to go next? And Groupon is one of those cases where you have the great customer base, large customers, 20 million plus, and then you have the largest merchant data set. But company has always been on the wrong side of things. And so meaning understood not very well in sometimes case. And the market valuation was going down and down and down. And so I actually, going back to my theme of taking a chance on something where I can impact that disproportionately, and this is a huge opportunity. So to me, it came down to two different factors. One, is it large enough opportunity to impact a lot of customers and merchants? And then second, is this something which I'm passionate about? And both of those boxes checked in there. And so that's one of the reasons I took the opportunity. We ran into a lot of headwind at Groupon initial days. Basically, inflation is something which is very, very difficult. And people think like inflation, you will use more group buying, more discounts. And that's great. But what happens in inflation cases is that actually merchants can raise the prices. They have labor shortages. That means they don't need to give the discounts. And so your supplier side is very weak. And so for me, we ran into that headwind where our supply was going down. And so I had to make sure that we are operationally very fit and stop cash burn. And that was most of my focus at Groupon.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I think the message, a lot of it is that you've taken some chances, you raised your hand, tackled some very, very important and difficult opportunities and challenges. And that's pretty phenomenal. And along the way, you had mentors or people, as you just said, who have believed in you. Kedar, you still obviously are so very young. I mean, where do you see your journey going from here?
I think it's very similar to what I have been doing in the past, which is basically, I'm not going to box myself into say, oh, because I was CEO of a public company, I have to be another CEO job, and that's what I'm going to look for. I'm looking for disproportionate impact. I'm looking for the biggest opportunity in terms of disproportionate impact, where people have the problem. I'm not looking for something which is very small and tiny bit incremental here and there, like I can change something and it will be great. So those are the two factors. And then I'm also very excited about coming to a new field or even applying to the existing field where my curiosity and my actually ability to be taking not no for these particular, because this is how the fundamentals are. Like laws of physics, I think this is said by various different physics people. Laws of physics are not to be questioned because sometimes it's proven. Laws of physics have been proven. But most of those things are not proven. And so you can go and question that of what is not proven. And so then you start to get new discoveries along the way. And I think that's what I'm looking for in terms of larger impact, larger problem size, and how can I be helpful? Because that's not something if you have the path, just like one particular data path. So AI fits into that particular bracket much larger. But I wouldn't be saying like next opportunity, I'm going to go into AI. I'm just looking for disproportionate impact. And I think that's where I'm trying to go.
So the future journey will involve some disproportionate impact, which is fantastic to hear from you. Now, Kedar, you had a definition of success probably of what success is like when you were coming out of college in Aurangabad. Has that definition changed over time now?
Personally and professionally, both have changed. And obviously they change from time to time. Like particularly personally, it used to be like definition of success is whatever your goal, like personal goal, right? Oh, I'm going to go to United States and I'm just going to have great life there. What I understood over the time period is not, again, very cliche, but it's not about destination. It's about journey. And so now looking back on all the experiences, you're like, oh, wow, journey is beautiful and you need to enjoy that rather than looking at the end goal. It's not a college tournament that like you get a championship and then you are successful or not successful. And then professionally, it used to be very easy. Like you can say, professionally, I'm going to be X level or my boss is going to be satisfied with me. And now it's all about whatever you are doing, is it delivering the impact? Mm-hmm. And so even if it is like project is done or feature is done or company achieved this particular health mark or whatever that is, KKS, that's great. Or interim goal. But is it actually translating into larger impact that you were looking for? And so that's what my definition is.
So it's evolved over time, as you have said, and
yeah,
as it rightfully should. Kedar, towards the end, we have some lightning round of questions, just short answers from you, brief answers from you. This podcast is called Indianness, and all of our guests, we ask the question, and all of them have different definitions. We'd love to know, what is your definition of Indianness?
The definition of Indianness, to me, it comes down to two words. One is hospitality, and second is authenticity. We make sure that we are great hosts. And that is applicable from anywhere where you are like going to a hut of somebody in slums to a palace somewhere else. And so that is like very common Indian people folks. And then second is authenticity. You won't find in India where they will just say hello and just move on or how are you doing and actually not have the intent behind that. So India, it's all about authentic, right? Like conversations, you are never going to get conversations which are surface level. And so to me, those are the two characteristics of Indianness.
So authentic and hospitable. Well, that's a good one. One living person in India or outside of India, who is of Indian origin, that inspires you, not in your family.
Actually, there are a lot of people who inspire me, but I would break your rule here in this particular case. When you say not in my family, it's not my parent, like my mom or my dad. Mm-hmm. It's my mama, who is my mom's brother. He is the definition, like he is a medical graduate, could have made a great career. He did make a great career in terms of being a doctor at a charitable hospital, runs the charitable hospital. Now he's a biggest contributor to that particular hospital. That hospital now impacts 10,000 people every day.
Wow.
And you can walk into that hospital and get yourself consulted from any discipline for less than 100 rupees. And so it's like that sort of impact in your life. And he still, until recently, was paid like very low, like less than whatever, $1,000 a month. And so to him, it's all about social impact. And to me, he's the role model. And so when I talk about like disproportionate impact, I always think about what will he do?
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. Very impressive. Just following that thought, who has been the most influential person in your journey? One person who has been the most influential in your journey.
I think that's Tony Hsieh, who was the founder and CEO of Zappos. And I will say why, because I will add that one particular statement, because it's like, you can say Tony Hsieh XYZ. For a lot of people, it's very, very different. But the biggest aspect that Tony drew, he lived his life intentional.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what he taught me is that a lot of folks always, like from our side, every day, it's all about our mind is towards the gratification on an everyday basis. Like you eat something and you feel better. You watch something, you feel better. It was all about for him is like, how do you intentionally live for long term? So things you do that are not going to give you any gratification for next 5 years, which are those you are doing in your everyday life? And so that sort of thing, thought process was developed by Tony.
I think it's inspired a lot of people. There's no doubt. Nike's tagline, Kedar, is just do it. If you had a personal tagline, what would that be?
Speed it up.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Finally, just one word answer. Do you like WhatsApp or talking?
I like talking.
Talking.
I do most of my one-on-ones when I was in COVID or non-COVID, walking and talking. So I never did my desk.
Okay. Final one. And since you talked about cricket, Virat Kohli or Sachin, who is your favorite?
I came out of era and stopped following cricket when Virat was playing. So Sachin for me.
Sachin, okay. You can't argue with that too. Kedar, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for letting us get a window into your life, the things that have influenced you, impacted you, so that it really makes a difference to our listeners. And really, really thank you from all of us here to you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me. It was fun talking about my journey so deeply.
Well, it is great. And I think there's still a lot that we didn't cover, but that we'll leave for another podcast. But thank you so much.
Thanks, Sanjay.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Indianist Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.